Hello and welcome to Failing Boldly, a podcast that invites people to share stories about failure, resilience, and perseverance. I'm Christian Kuhn, author of the book Failing Boldly and pastor of Urban Village Church in Chicago. My guest for this week's podcast is Olympic speed skater Brian Hansen. Brian is a native of the Chicago and Milwaukee areas and is a three-time Olympian, including competing in the 1500, the team pursuit, and the mass start events in this most recent Olympics a few weeks ago. Brian won a silver medal in team pursuit in 2010. We had a chance to talk about his Olympic experiences, what it takes to stay in elite condition, and how he responds to setbacks. I hope you enjoy it. Well, Brian Hansen, thank you so much for being with me on the Failing Boldly podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what. Well, so we're now a few weeks after the Winter Olympics, and this is a time probably when most folks who watch these different sports only see them once every 4 years. And so I'm always curious for folks who do get involved with whatever event they were a part of, how it was they got into it. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your upbringing and how you got to be a speed skater.
So I played hockey. That's how I kind of got into skating. Then there's a short track speed skating club about 10 minutes from my house, Northbrook Speed Skating Club. I was talking to a family friend when I was really little about what sport her kid did, and she said speed skating. So she said, you should give it a try. And, we went over to the club. I tried it with a friend and, basically stuck with short track since. Then I got into long track speed skating, which is done on a 400 meter oval. And that was about an hour and 15 minutes away, was the nearest long track rink in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Then we started driving up to try long track on weekends, and I got more and more into it as I got older and eventually specialized in long track speed skating. So
was it something with when you were younger, how old were you when you kind of first started the short track?
I was about 10 when I started short track at Northbrook.
Okay. Did you know right away as when you first started doing it, did you take to it immediately?
I loved a bunch of different sports when I was little, and I loved speed skating as well. So, when I was around that age, I played a lot of sports. I was on the swim team, I did, speed skating, I did hockey and speed skating for a little while. I did tennis, soccer and a bunch of other sports.
So when did speed skating start to become your thing? When did you start realizing, I think I want to devote more time to this. And then I guess as a follow-up, when did you know that, I could be actually one of the best in the world at this?
So, speed skating was always something that was put pretty, leisurely for me until around the age of 14 or 15. Around that age is when, I realized, okay, it's something that I could take more seriously and be really good at. Also around the age of 15 is when I was 4 years out from the 2010 Olympics. So that was also kind of the age where I had to start to make the decision of is this something that I want to take more seriously and try to make this next Olympics, or sort of just continue as I was and see if I can get better. I decided to take it more seriously and focus on it more. So throughout high school, my parents drove me up an hour and 15 minutes to the rink and back to focus on skating.
Did you allow yourself when you were that age, 14, 15, did you allow yourself and kind of say to your parents, I really, the Olympics 2010 is really what I want to focus on?
To be honest, it's hard for me to remember those conversations exactly. I knew that we were going through that decision a little bit. It was difficult because I also was involved with other things with high school. I wanted to maintain a social life, or I also played soccer my freshman and sophomore year in the fall, and then I played lacrosse and tennis in the springtime. So, I mean, it was always a bit of like a balancing act or a bit of juggling to try to figure out what exactly, how exactly to like take skating more seriously without just like giving up everything that I had, or like the life that I had in high school and the friends that I grew up with and things like that.
Is that pretty, I guess my stereotype perhaps of somebody who trains, who's an Olympian, is that it becomes really the only thing that they ever do. But it sounds like you really tried a balance to your social life and then continuing to do other sports too. Is that in the world of speed skating, is that unusual, that balance, or is that fairly typical?
I'd say it's a little unusual.
Okay.
Most of the skaters my age at that time, a lot of them actually moved up to Milwaukee. And a lot of them that I grew up with skating with in Chicago, they ended up moving at some point or another to Milwaukee or to Salt Lake City, where the national team trains. And I'd say also that's kind of the most, the easiest logistic. Like if you want to train for the Olympics starting around the age of 15 or 16, like the best thing to do is usually to move if you're not in the right place. But for me, I had a lot of help from my parents. They were helpful in giving me rides back and forth to the rink, and they were also like happy to do it, because they were definitely part of the journey. So, because I had that support, I was able to stay an hour and 20 minutes away from the place that I trained. Whereas I'd say most skaters, you know, it's just logistically pretty hard to do that. So they moved where it was more convenient.
So I was wondering if you could walk us through, as you are leading up to a major event, whether it's a World Championships or the Olympics, walk us through what a typical week of training might be like for you.
So it depends on the time of year. In the summertime, we do a lot different style of training than in the wintertime or in season. So in the summertime, I usually do a lot of road cycling. I do a little bit of weights, and I do what's called dry land. To break it down a little further, within cycling, usually we do a lot of interval training. I typically go outside most of the time, and I'll pretty much explore the roads of Wisconsin to kind of keep it interesting for myself. So like one thing I kind of got into this past summer was I'd ride to a certain point and then I'd pick up where I left off. And then I ended up exploring all over Wisconsin that way. And I got in about 2,500 miles. And then weight training, that's pretty straightforward. Nothing too interesting about that. And then dry land is, in speed skating, it usually involves a lot of jumps and exercises in the speed skating position that mimic what we do on the ice. So those are the three main types of training that I do in a week. Usually a typical week consists of around 10 workouts a week. I train twice a day, and then I work out 5 days a week. So 10 workouts a week and 2 off days. That's a typical week.
In the off season or for in season?
That's a typical week in the off season. In season, usually I'll skate around 5 times a week. And then I'll also do weights twice a week, and then I'll do biking or dry land the other 3 workouts of the week. So also 10 workouts a week. But just different workouts in those 10 workouts.
What keeps you, I would imagine that, not every day when you wake up, whether it's biking or whatever, that you get up and, or maybe I'm wrong, but hop out of bed, can't wait to get to the workout. What is your general, mindset when you go into a workout? Are you pretty excited, pumped, ready to do it? Or are there some days where you have to really motivate yourself to get into it?
Some workouts more than others I'm more excited for. I'd say it depends. You know, generally when I'm skating better, I look forward to workouts. And I think it's really important to learn or to try to look forward to workouts, but that's definitely not always the case. So, you know, some of the workouts that I tend to look forward to more are, like my test workouts. Like if there's a workout coming up where I know it's like a bit of a test for me throughout that season, then like, I'll anticipate it. I'll put it that way, because I'm not really like looking forward to it, but I'm just like kind of nervous for it. Other workouts that I look forward to, you know, in the summertime, just getting outside and cycling and being social, I think is always a great way to keep the workouts fun and interesting, and also to stay motivated. So like generally, you know, if it's the right competitive atmosphere at training and everyone's like kind of having fun and competing with each other, whether it's cycling or skating, I think that always keeps it fun as well.
So for this past, well, you were a silver medalist in Team Pursuit in 2010, and then competed, if I'm right on this, you were in the 1500, the Team Pursuit, and the Mass Start. Is that right, for this most recent Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
First, I want to ask you, how did you feel about how you did? And then I have a follow-up question about what happens when you either don't perform as well, or what happens when you have setbacks or disappointments?
Right. I was in the Team Pursuit, the Mass Start, and the 1500. And so in the Team Pursuit, we finished eighth. There were only eight teams. So, like if you look at it in that way, it wasn't that great. But if you look at our time was actually pretty good. And it wasn't that far off of what, most of the other teams, the higher up teams were doing. So, you know, it's a really, that race has become really competitive. And now a lot of those countries will flip around, from, you know, first, second, third, or fourth, fifth, sixth, you know, so, you know, I think we had a decent race. It just, we had to go a little faster to make it higher up. And then as far as the 1500 goes, I finished 15th, which wasn't a pretty good finish for me, all things considered, this year. Although I kind of had higher hopes, because training was going really well leading up to that race, that I could finish up higher up and potentially, you know, in an incredible race, I could finish top three. But, you know, I ended up 15th, and, you know, that's how that goes. I would say normally with these types of races, you know, you make corrections and you look forward and you do make new changes. But the thing with the Olympics is that's the last one. So there's always that feeling of like, well, you know, that's the end of the road for this season or these past 4 years. And we like, you know, we made changes after every World Cup and did things that, we thought might work, but they just, that's just how it goes.
Do you have a process? I guess I would imagine on the kind of race it is, obviously I would assume that the Olympics or the World Cup are the major ones. Mm-hmm. And so it might be harder if you don't compete in a way that you would have liked. I assume that it might be harder to recover or to respond to the disappointment as opposed to a smaller race. But talk to me a little bit, if you could, about how do you respond to disappointment? And have you been able throughout your career to respond and persevere? Or are there some moments where you really, it's so hard to come back from a disappointing race?
Mm-hmm. You know, I like to look at the things. Sometimes in a lot of bad races, there's at least one or two things to, you know, take away from it, even in like the worst, or, you know, races that just straight up didn't go well. So like there's a lot of factors leading up to a race, you know, from preparation to your mindset during the race to how you race the race. And so for example, you know, I remember I had a really bad race in Calgary, at one of the World Cups, and, you know, I was frustrated. I went and made like three changes. I changed my warm-up routine. I changed how I was eating and preparing myself before my race. And I changed how my blades were set up on my boot, you know, and I went back and I had a great race after that. So, you know, I think that there's just that mentality of like always staying with it, so to speak. So like if I have a bad race, just like don't like mentally give up on it. You know, stay with it and know that like, you know, the performance is still there in you. It's just, sometimes it takes some extra fine tuning to find. And I think for me that like for that race in Calgary, it was, changing up my preparation mostly, but also a little bit, some blade setup and things like that helped as well, I think.
So you were able to, and were you able to pretty quickly just get to a point where you're doing some reflection, what didn't go well and learn from it? Or does that take a few days or weeks for you to finally go back to the race and then to realize, okay, this is what I need to do differently?
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I think, you know, just one day was enough. Although okay. There are plenty of moments where like it does take multiple weeks of fine tuning and adjustment and looking at things. You know, I think with skating, it's such a simple sport that you end up analyzing such specific details of what you're doing. Because there's only a couple things you can change in your, in the process of skating. And so you can look at the motion, you know, you can look at your workouts, you can look at your equipment. And I think like you end up fine tuning the same kind of thing again and again and again and again. And that can take multiple weeks. And sometimes it's hard to tell like whether you're moving forward or backward or like whether the changes you're making are actually helping. But I think, you know, I've written down every workout that I've done since I was 15 years old.
Wow.
And I've written down, usually if there's a major thought, I'll write it down. So I do have like a reflection process that I go through. And I think it's important to maintain that reflection process so that, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm curious about your mindset in that. Do you feel like you have a pretty good perspective on things so that if you don't do well, are you able to say, I'm still an elite athlete in this sport? I'm still an Olympian. Or do you allow yourself to go to an extreme saying, this is the worst. Mm-hmm. I'm the worst. I don't know why I'm doing this. So I guess, where would you put yourself on that spectrum?
I mean, okay. So on one hand, you know, I think that I usually stay pretty positive after practices or races don't go well, because, I think like at this point I understand that usually after a bad race, I just know that like, if I had a good race a week ago, I know it's still in me. I just like messed up mentally or messed up the lead up process or messed up something like that. Sorry, what was the second part of that?
When you respond to a setback, whether you have a pretty good mindset or perspective about where you are in your field, or does it ever happen where you just the worst case scenario and think, I'm terrible at this. Right. I'm never going to do it again.
Right. Yeah, you know, and I do have moments where like, so like on one hand, you know, I think I'm do stay with, I do tend to have like the mentality where I know that like things are going to be okay. Like physically, like, I don't know if I say like, oh, I lost like my skill or something like that. But, on the other hand, when races don't go well, like, somehow it's really easy to question like your purpose in the sport, like what exactly you're doing. Cause it's like, oh my gosh, I spent the past like month and a half trying to figure out how to drop any time in my race. And I didn't drop any time. I got worse. Like, and then in that sense, it's kind of like, like you have this like meltdown of purpose of like, what did I just do over the past month and a half? Cause I went from like being, you know, 12th to now I'm like 17th and my times are dropping. And there's a little bit of that. But I think the thing for me has been just like knowing that it's always like a fine tuning process. And sometimes, you know, it's not that you have to take a step back, but like, you're going to take a step back and you just got to try to keep moving forward. It's part of the process. Like the graph's not perfectly straight. Mm-hmm. It's not a straight upward trend. You know, it goes up and down. And so you just got to be ready to account for the down spots.
Are you pretty good at self-motivating or do you, and I would assume, I know you have a coach, do you have a team of folks to kind of help you have that perspective and rebound from the setbacks?
Yeah, you know, my coach helps me, like, especially in the moment where, it's right before the race, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, you just kind of forget about that race or forget about, you know, something and then just make it happen in the race. So like in that sense, yeah, you know, my coach has helped me a lot. You know, I think like, whoever, if it's my parents there with me, they help me as well in that sense, you know, just making sure that I can rebound from mm-hmm. something.
One of the interesting things that is in my own kind of, usually when I've watched the Olympics and speed skaters, it's always been the individual. And so I'm curious, when you, I guess this is going to be a multifaceted question. Well, let me first ask you, do you prefer the individual events or do you prefer the mm-hmm. team pursuit or do they both just, you both love them both? They're just different.
So, I mean, the individual events in speed skating, like the 500, 1000, 1500, it's an interesting thing. It's like those races in and of themselves just, I mean, they're not that much fun to race because they're a time trial. But I think that there's something that like that's really rewarding about doing well in those races. And that's that it's the true test of like how strong you are as an athlete. So like as racing them in and of itself, like is like there, it's like kind of fun, but doing well is more rewarding than, you know, I think any other race. Because you know that as an individual, you improved as a skater, that you kind of like cracked the code of like beating your own times or even beating other people's times. And you figured out technique, training. And like, there's not a whole lot of other excuses you can put in place. And like, and so there's so many races and events, I think, where there's, you know, in speed skating and also out of speed skating, where there's a lot of other factors that are in play. And like time trials and speed skating is like one race where there's just not a whole lot of factors and everything's up to you to figure out how to go the fastest.
So it sounds like the individual are a little bit more rewarding than the team pursuit.
Well, I mean, the team pursuit has been, as in terms of like, it's rewarding in terms of, you know, knowing your training has, that personal fulfillment of becoming a better athlete. But the team pursuit is, you know, rewarding in its own way and that it's a team event. So, you know, obviously you win as a team. And, you know, in Vancouver, like we won a silver medal in the team pursuit. And like, I think that was like a really special moment because, you know, one, it was my first Olympic medal, you know, but two, to do it as a team was pretty cool, knowing that, like, you know, we all worked together to make it happen. And, coming from such a competitive individual sport, it's really nice to have that event where it doesn't matter who was skating well or who wasn't skating well. The fact that we just all crossed the line, you know, at a really good, time and we all pushed each other, that's also rewarding in its own way.
I was going to, you answered this, I think, a little bit, but I was going to ask, usually when I watch it for the 1500, that it's one skater and one, another skater. And so I was going to ask, when you're skating, are you thinking about the other competitor in that heat, or whether it's yourself and your time? It sounds like for you, it's really more about the process of bettering yourself and bettering your time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely about bettering myself and bettering my time. There are some moments where it's like, there's different tracks that are different, have different speeds. So, you know, for example, if you skate at an altitude track, you're going to have a faster time than at a sea level track. And some days are faster and some days are slower. So it also does help to look at like where other people are finishing. And if everyone's finishing with a fast time, chances are the ice is probably pretty fast. So in the 1500, you know, some World Cups, I'm definitely looking at more how other people are finishing and trying to, you know, at least maintain my position with compared to other people. I guess it depends on where I'm at in the season and that sort of thing. You know, I think just walking away with something to take from every competition has been important for me. So if I don't do very well compared to other people, but I get a personal best, I'm just going to count it as a personal best and I'll be happy with it. You know, on the other hand, it could be a slow time, but I did really well compared to all the skaters and I finished pretty high up in the rankings. I'd also take that as a win and walk away with that, you know, happily. So either way, you know, in that sense, if I do something well, I'd be happy to just call it a win in my own way and I guess walk away happy.
So this was your third Olympics. What's next for you? Are you looking at the 22 games and competing in other events until then, or are you thinking about going into some form of retirement?
Well, I'm still figuring that out. I think, I mean, right now I've been in the process of trying to figure out exactly what I'm going to do. And that includes, I'm job searching. I'm probably going to stay in the Milwaukee, Chicago area. I probably want to stay involved with the sport. I think, I want to coach part time. I have some ideas for some things that I would like to see happening in the sport of speed skating. Which includes getting more skaters involved in outdoor skating and kind of keeping skating or making skating more of a leisure activity. I think right now it's most of skating is very like cutthroat and there's a lot of competition and there's not too much leisure speed skating in the sport. So I guess just trying to see if I could be a part of making that happen, I think is something I'm looking to do in the next couple of years. And then hopefully just having enough time to travel a little bit around the Wisconsin area and get outside. So that's my plans.
It's so interesting. I think for viewers of the Olympics, I don't know, I guess I'll just speak for myself. You only see them, especially again in the sports, you only see the Olympic sports, you see once every 4 years. And I don't know how often viewers think about what are Olympians doing the rest of the time. And so to hear an Olympian just coming off the Winter Olympics saying, I'm looking for a job, sounds a little, I don't know, for me, it just sounds a little weird. And so do folks say that to you, or do they just assume that you're just constantly training and that somehow, some way you'll be able to earn a living, or am I out of the ordinary in thinking that?
Yeah, I mean, it depends who I'm talking to, but like, for example, a lot of my friends, you know, they wonder how I get through like these past 7 years. So we do get a little bit of help from the USOC, especially if you do really well, then you can get some stipend money that helps you get through the year. But for me, I've had also a lot of help from my parents. You know, they've helped support me. I did go to school for 2 years at Marquette University here in Milwaukee, and then 2 years at University of Colorado at Boulder. So, I mean, it's been a long process of skating and training, also going to school. And And it is hard to sustain that kind of lifestyle if you don't have help from your parents. I mean, you got to find a way to make money. And so that's kind of one of the main goals I have in this next quad, is trying to see if I could find a way to make a living and then possibly skate again. Okay. There are programs with the USOC that help skaters or athletes training for an elite level try to work on a flexible schedule where they can also compete or train and compete in their free time. But I mean, the thing is, ultimately, I think it's important to be able to find a way to balance working and training, like something that is more of an investment and that can also possibly be a career.
So one question that I ask all my guests is if you could just share a story of failure, whether it be personally or professionally. You mentioned maybe this is your story. You talked a little bit earlier about the competition in Calgary that didn't go as well as you would have liked. Is there another story, or is that the one that that comes to mind for you?
Something that's more of been a long-term, like, dragging failure has been trying to stay physically healthy while I'm skating. You know, a lot of the injuries that are involved with skating are overuse injuries. So from injuries that come from the weight room and then skating and then training on the bike. And it's really frustrating and difficult because it's always a balance. You know, you're dealing with overuse injuries and what's training to overtraining and what's pushing your body too hard. So, you know, for me, like about 8 years ago, I started having some lower back injuries that came from the weight room, but then that kind of stemmed into skating. And like, there was a period there where like things got pretty difficult. I had to change all my workouts around, and like, it was like really everything and all the energy I had was going into trying to train while avoid injury. And I think like it just kind of became a nagging thing and something that I really didn't overcome very well. So even though it wasn't really like, I mean, of course I've had many results that weren't what I've hoped and many stretches through seasons that weren't what I hoped. But I think for me, like something that I really like invested myself in was trying to stay healthy, because, you know, if anything, I'm, you know, part of being an athlete is like, you know, I feel like I'm supposed to be healthy. Like it's supposed to be helping me be healthy. Yeah. I was kind of felt like I'm deteriorating my body at the expense of trying to do really well in competition. So I think, yeah, it's tough to cope with mentally, knowing that like, okay, you know, I realize I have like some simple strength gains I can make. All I have to do is like do these weight workouts. Yeah. At the same time, I know that those weight workouts are risky for me and can sometimes put a little bit extra strain on my body. So that was kind of the biggest failures for me were those years where I couldn't really figure out how to train hard and stay injury free. Eventually, you know, I kind of found a solution that was between physical therapy, balance and training, and just learning how to keep at something while having an injury. You know, it took a lot of patience, but I think at this point I've figured out enough methods and solutions to overcome various injuries. So, you know, and I guess to kind of elaborate on what I mean is like, okay, I'll have a back problem. I'll figure out how to overcome parts of my back problem. And then, you know, I'll have a knee problem come up and then my back problem will come back and then I'll just be like totally sidelined. And I think that happens with a lot of athletes in this type of sport, where they'll get some sort of overtraining issue or some sort of, overuse, and then they won't know what to do. So I think, you know, for me, just finding a way to, stay training and stay healthy while, you know, doing everything that I can do, to become a better athlete, has been the biggest obstacle for me. And also, it's also been my biggest failure, because I definitely failed at it, trying to stay healthy while training. And I think I found some solutions, but it was through a lot of patience.
Well, that's a good note to end on. Brian, thank you so much for speaking with me, and best of luck in your own training and discernment about what's next for you.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
And that is this week's podcast. Thanks again to Brian Hansen for speaking with me. You can follow Brian's next steps in his career by following him on Twitter at Brian T. Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. I hope you will subscribe to this podcast and give it a rating on iTunes, as my next conversation is with the author and justice leader, Lisa Sharon Harper. To learn more about my book and the ministry I'm a part of, you can go to christiankuhn.com. Thanks again for listening.